one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
People, welcome to the first ever Retrolution show. Your host is Scott, aka Kid Human. We have on the line with me my co-host Stanley Kubrick.
Say hello. What's up?
Yeah, he's all the way in Madrid, Spain, covering the UK and the England angle on a lot of stuff today. We got our producer. Thank you very much, Surfer.
Hello. How everybody doing?
Good, good.
Fantastic.
All right, you guys ready to get into July 1989, where Bart Simpson was shirts were your choice of fashion, along with skid pants and Z Cavaricci's?
Speak for yourself. I didn't wear Bart Simpson clothes.
All right, so let's go here. July 1989. Let's just take a look at a bunch of things here. The Dow Jones closed the year at 2753. Your interest rates were 10.5%. The average cost of a new house was $120,000, and your average monthly rent was $420. Try to find that today.
Almost impossible.
Exactly. The average income per year was $27,000. That's barely minimum wage today. That's only $12.
No,
$13 an hour.
That's more than minimum wage.
Yeah. And then average price for a new car was $15,350. Can't even buy two tires nowadays. And gas was 97 cents a gallon.
Those are fascinating figures, but I'm more interested in Nenna's cherries. She was meant to be the Black Madonna, and she didn't make it. She didn't make it. I mean, she was singing about male prostitutes in mainstream, and I thought she was going to be a world sensation and going to go until her 50s, just like Madonna. But it didn't happen.
Now she faded out. It's basically a one-hit wonder.
Not really. I think Man Child.
She had other hits, but...
Yeah, there was Man Child did fairly well, for example. She was a sensation, and every man... fancied her back in the day, and she was semi-streetwise. I don't know how working class she really was, but she was a beautiful woman, beautiful. I will always remember her and the cherries.
Yeah, but for those wondering, that was not a number one song in July of 1989. It was hanging around the charts and topped out at number three. But it was one of my favorite songs back in the day, so we'll give it some love. Definitely a popular song. Okay, so what else happened in July of 1989? One of the biggest things to go on is we have the All-Star Game in baseball. And one of Surfer's hometown people, Philadelphia's Mike Schmidt, had retired in May. But yet he was still elected to play in the All-Star Game, even though he was no longer playing baseball.
Well, you know, he was at that time, like, one of the top home run hitters of all time. So, like, you know, with baseball, you usually hate other players from other teams. But Mike Smith was never that type of guy where he went to another city, and people respected him and cheered him and wanted to see him hit home runs too. So
now, growing up playing in baseball, my idols were, I played third base. My idols were Mike Schmidt and Greg Nettles, because, you know, I'm a Yankee fan, so he was definitely one of the better players on the Yankees back then. So, but those were my two favorite third basemen that I was looking up to at that time. Now, across the border, Stanley, do you remember who won Wimbledon that year?
I think it was the most beautiful German lady with the biggest nose, and she taught me to love women with big noses, and it was Steffi Graf.
Yes,
the German, against Martina Navratilova. And Navratilova was like a tank. She was like an Eastern European, Eastern Bloc defecting tank. And Steffi did it. And so did the ginger German, Boris Becker. And he won it against Stefan Edberg, the Swede, I believe. Yeah. One thing, though, that something that, because in Wimbledon they get to talk and get interviewed after the match, we learnt in England that, you know, Germans could be nice, and we forgive them for bombing our grannies in the World War II. So and Boris Becker is, you know, often in the British media here and again on Top Gear, I think, sometimes. And you know, I think he had sex with someone in a wardrobe and got caught.
Probably.
Yeah, he did. I remember that. And he loves the ladies, you know, the black ladies, just like Nana Cherry as well. I think he married a German girl from immigrant parents. So he loves women with sensual organs down there.
Yeah. Let's say hello to the chat room. We got Joshy and Rick Dara hanging out in the chat room today. How you doing, fellas? And, some other news in sports that month. Paula Ivan broke the female world record for running a 1 mile in 4 minutes and 15.61 seconds. New York pitching great Ron Guidry retires. You remember Louisiana Lightning, right, Surfer?
No, I can't say that I do.
You remember the Pine Tar game with George Brett when he hit the home run and they called him back?
Yeah, I remember that.
When they protested the game, Ron Guidry actually went out and played right field for the rest of that game because it was under protest.
Oh, okay, so I didn't know that.
Yeah. We also have, what do we have here? The 76th Tour de France was won by Greg LeMond, not George LeMond of the time. He was making some club music. Del Murphy of the Atlanta Braves hit 2 3-run homers in one inning, becoming the 14th man to hit 2 home runs in one inning and tied a record of 6 RBIs in the same inning. Vince Coleman, he, one of the fastest men at the time, rivaled Ricky Henderson, finally got caught stealing after 50 straight steals. And on a sad note, we had, at that time, they were the Los Angeles Angels. Donnie Moore, the pitcher, shot himself and committed suicide at the age of 35. That's sad news. But we also had the 60th All-Star Game, in which the AL beat the NL at Anaheim Stadium, with the MVP being the great Bo Jackson.
Bo knows.
Bo was a beast at that time in football and baseball.
Yeah. Just imagine if he'd have stuck to one sport.
Yeah. I mean, you remember Tecmo Bowl? You could not stop Bo Jackson. You would pick the L.A. Raiders just so they would, so you could have Bo Jackson on the team. Okay, let's see what else here happened. Now, let's check this out. One of the number one songs on July 1st, and was the only day in July was actually number one in America, was a duo called Milli Vanilli. Now, they, we all know they're famous for lip-syncing their way to a Grammy, just like the Usos did recently, getting them for nothing. Their number one song was Baby Don't Forget My Number. It was only a one-week chart topper. But let's get a little piece of that playing now.
Okay, Eddie. This one's for you.
Did he really say love is stronger than thunder?
I think so. But you know what? You know, even though, I mean, there were some really great singing brothers. I mean, their voice just really came out in their songs. It's like you really felt the soul and the depth of what these two brothers were singing. I don't know why everybody dumped on them. I just don't get it.
They were lip syncing, that's why.
No, they weren't. That was real. That was dumb.
I remember when this scandal came out about the lip-syncing and the fact that they, what the media was trying to convey back then was that they didn't sing on any of their songs. And that, you know, this sort of white middle-class guy like Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad came out and said, I sang for them on their album instead of them. And he was like a 50, 45-year-old guy. And I couldn't believe it. And I, though, if you listen to the lyrics, it doesn't sound like a 45-year-old man of that type is actually doing the work for them. So I wonder how much of it was true.
A lot of that was going on in that time. There was quite a few groups that it turned out that the act you saw on stage wasn't the people that actually sung the songs. What was the name of that one female singer?
Sinita?
No. She was supposed to be from France, and
but Vanessa Paradis.
And she couldn't speak a word of English, but yet she was singing in English, like belting out these songs.
It wasn't Vanessa Paradis, Joe LaTaxi, no, was it?
I don't think it was her.
No.
I remember her name.
And it turned out it was someone else.
Wasn't that woman who sang? She didn't sing in English. It was Desireless Voyage, Voyage. That was a big hit in Euro, but that was 87. So, anyway.
Yeah. So, but I mean, now we know why Surfer's knees hurt him today. He was out in the club dancing to all these songs at 23 years old. I mean, those were some good songs. Favorite?
Was it Milli or Vanilli? They were from Germany as well, weren't they?
Yeah. Whoever heard of I couldn't tell which one was Milli and which one was Vanilli.
I thought they were brothers, but they weren't, were they?
No, they weren't brothers. They were like best friends from childhood, I believe it was.
I think one sadly, tragically died in a car crash. Didn't he? I think he did. Just it always happens with duos who go out the boat.
One died tragically.
Yeah, one died. Just like the poor kid of, well, not a kid anymore, from Criss Cross.
Yeah, that was Criss Cross.
That's horrible.
Yeah, let's see here. Milli Vanilli was a West German-based R&B group.
Yeah, that was it.
What were their real names? Was it?
It was probably Kevin and John, or Johan.
Fab Morvan and Rob Pilatus.
See, almost right. I think Pilatus or whatever his name, Rob died. I think he was the one that died.
Yeah, poor Rob guy. Pilatus died. Pilatus was found dead of a suspected alcohol and prescription overdose in a hotel room. Death was ruled accidental.
So it wasn't a car crash. Horrible.
No. No. But I mean, they made some good songs for back in that time.
Yeah.
I think my favorite by them, I think, was probably Blame It on the Rain.
I can't remember that one.
Right. But now, over in the UK, you guys didn't have as many number one hits over there because they stayed on the charts a little bit longer. Now, from July 1st to July 15th, with basically half the month, a group called Soul to Soul, which is one of my favorite songs from back in the time, had a hit with Back to Life and it topped the UK charts at number one for 15 days. And we got a little sound clip of that, Surfer?
Yeah.
Okay.
If it'll play.
I still crank that song when I hear it on the radio.
You couldn't move in the United Kingdom for that song. Every club, every pub, every shopping mall had that song playing. And it's ironic because it's a song about the weekend clubbing ending and you having to go back to work on the Monday. So it, in a way, when you listen to it in a club, it was almost reminding you that you were due back on Monday to school or your job or whatever. So I'm surprised it was a hit because of the hidden meaning behind it.
It was all the beat. It was the beat, man. You moved to it back then. It was all about going out to the clubs and dancing.
What was the hidden meaning, Stanley?
What was the meaning? What we viewed it as, many people, is that it was the end of the. It was basically the Monday morning sad song that, or the end of the weekend sad song when you were out clubbing, and you had the prospect of going back to your mundane life.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying. And the video was pretty cool as well with Jazzy B with his dreadlocks and his shades. I remember it well.
And all the females had the long braids.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing we did forget to cover in sports was Mike Tyson. He fought Carl Williams and knocked him out in a minute 33. Man, Mike Tyson was beast mode back then. He was beast mode long before Marshawn Lynch came around.
If you look at the height difference between Williams, who actually tragically died 2 years ago, he was big and lanky, but he was a strong, powerful guy. Just thing is that Tyson was such a little bulldog that the tall guys were hidden down, so they couldn't get to his chin. But Tyson just finished him off, I think, with a left cross. I actually had to watch it again to remind me. Well, but it was just like the Michael Sphinx fight.
What a lot of people may not realize about Tyson was he didn't just come out and just throw punches. him and his people had a plan where you would, if you would watch him closely, he would hit certain parts of the body and just break that person's person down, yeah, so that they would drop within a minute or two.
Absolutely,
he hit all the right spots.
He studied pressure points in his opponent's bodies before he actually went out there and worked on combinations to hit them. He was more intelligent than people give him credit for, and so were his trainers, basically. That's true, by the way. I'm not making it up.
I don't know if I would put the word intelligent in Mike Tyson in the same sentence.
Well, to actually remember the pressure points, see them, and then hit them. It's not the kind of intelligence that Albert Einstein would have, but like a raw physical, visual, spatial intelligence.
He does have a good cartoon, though.
Mike Tyson's Mysteries.
He drew it himself in his spare time. He's a savant. The man is a mathematician, an artist, fighter, a warrior poet, and an ex-con as well, to boot.
Yeah, a big-time ex-con and a wife-beater.
So they say. I mean, that women sometimes tell porkies to get out of relationships with a bit of money. You never know. Might be true, might be wrong. I wasn't there at the time, Judge.
All right, then moving along here, let's check out some news. In news of July of 89, we had the first test flight of the U.S. stealth bomber. And, that went on to be a major point in the U.S. military. We had a U.S. Airlines DC-10 crash in Sioux City, Iowa. It's sad it killed 112, but 184 survived, which is very rare that anyone survives in a plane crash, let alone 184 people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this one here I find interesting. A federal grand jury indicted a Cornell University student by the name of Robert Tappan Morris. He released a computer virus, making him the first person to be prosecuted under the 1986 Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. So, he released the first computer virus from back in the day in 1989.
So, he was probably the first one released to get caught.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, in happier news, Hugh Hefner married playmate Kimberly Conrad on July 1st of 1989.
Don't mention Hugh. He might, the way this year has been going, he might be next.
Well, he was Viagra even around back then? Could he even get it up? Did he even ask him?
No, back then, he was only in his 70s, probably, so yeah.
Just about. Did the marriage work out? Is that a silly question?
No.
Ooh.
Not at all. Now, 14-year-old actress Drew Barrymore attempted suicide. She was one of those childhood stars that just got caught up with fame and started binging on alcohol and drugs.
It is very surprising that she has a career today, because she started out so young and she could have burnt out so quickly and easily, and she turned it around in her adult career,
blocked. Yeah, she owns her own production studios and everything. She produced Donnie Darko afterwards and a lot of the Charlie's Angels movies as well. Now, of course, we all know her from E.T., and let's see here, was E.T. and what was that movie, the Stephen King one she did? Firestarter. Yeah. So definitely good thing she's still around today. Bryan Cranston was 33 at the time, and he married Robin Dearden, actress Robin Dearden. Of course, we all know Bryan Cranston from Malcolm in the Middle and Breaking Bad.
Yeah, well, it's funny that he went on to do Breaking Bad, because I don't think if you'd have looked ahead in the future, nobody would have thought he would have had a role like that.
Right. But, all right, now, are you getting Stanley? We seem to have lost Stanley. He had some Skype issues.
I don't know.
Yeah. While we're doing that, this is insane. the largest prison sentence to date. Thai, as in Thailand, financial scammer, May Shamoy Tapiaso, if I'm pronouncing that name right, and her accomplices were each sentenced to 141,078 years in prison.
What is the purpose of that?
I mean, that's what all their crimes added up to be. I mean, it ends up being life, no matter how you look at it, but they committed enough crimes to add up to that long in prison. Moving on here, let's go ahead and the final bit of news for July of 89 was Nintendo released a Game Boy handheld system in North America on July 31st of that year.
Which, the original Game Boy handheld?
The original handheld Game Boy, yes, sir.
Didn't own it.
My friend had one, so I just was always hanging out with him playing Tetris. We would sit there and play Tetris for hours trying to break high scores. Tetris, you know, one of the biggest games ever made. It's still popular today. I'll still play the hell out of Tetris today.
The Russians was good for something, weren't they?
Yeah. Now,
that nuclear Armageddon.
Yeah, and usually when I'm trying to fit something or pack it, like I look at my dishwasher and I'm like picturing Tetris, like this could fit here, here, there, like that. It helped, man. It was a good skill.
I was more of a Zelda fan.
Yeah, well, sticking to video game news, it came out towards the end of June of 89, but Golden Axe was released for the Sega Genesis at the end of June of 89, which means it was one of the more popular games in July of 89 being played. So Golden Axe was a great game. It was, you know, you could team up with your friend and run through basic side-scrolling Viking type stuff, killing dragons and beasts and everything, if I remember it correctly.
I'm surprised the Conan publishers didn't sue them. I know that it was very focused on being a barbarian and an axe, and I think you could even climb ladders, which is certainly out there amongst the top things you could do back in the day. For little side scrollers like that, I didn't pump that many quarters into it. I used to spend all my 10 pences on Operation Wolf, which back in July 1989 was both the top arcade game and, or at least number three, and the top home video arcade without the machine gun mount and the rocket launching button on there. So I must have aimed at more soldiers' nuts with a few good shots on that game. And I'm sure other school kids in Britain dipped into their granny's purse for coins to play more goes and continues on that game. But that was my number one game of that month and that year, and I remember it well.
Yeah, Operation Wolf was definitely great. What else do we have going on here? July 5th. One of the more popular TV shows of our generation premiered on TV at that time. And yes, sir, I'm talking about Seinfeld. Seinfeld went on to be on TV for 9 years. Great show, all about nothing. Nothing happened. Nothing going on, just your basic everyday life.
Wasn't my cup of tea.
It wasn't my cup of tea, and it was meant to be a cult show here in UK. They put endless number of episodes on, hardly anyone watched it, but they did the full run, and people just didn't get it, because it was mundane, it was celebrating the mundane, as I remember, and I don't know, he's a rich guy, isn't he, the lead of that comedy, and he's well known, but in Britain, it just didn't click. Didn't click with us. But I heard that season one was a bit of a failure, even in the US, and then it sort of picked up in season two. Well, it's almost like Game of Thrones has.
Well, the push was, it was supposed to be half sitcom, half stand-up. And I think that was throwing people off, that, you know, halfway through part of the show, he would do a stand-up routine.
Yep. I can't remember that. Not every show, right?
No, like in the first season, like every show was basically...
Right, okay.
Something of that sort.
Well, that's weird. That's a bit like Louis Louis, isn't it? Yeah, the series. He does, I mean, he does it with his real footage from his real stand-ups, but it works, Louis, really well.
That's what Seinfeld would do. It would be from his stand-up. He would just show little clips in the beginning years.
I just think Seinfeld's a bit bloody boring, to be honest with you.
I liked everybody else on the show beyond him.
Yeah, I mean, probably sidekicks sort of fuel the humor, but
George and Kramer, I think they were funnier than he was.
Yeah, I mean, then it did that annoying little bass line when it flitted off to another scene. He thought, "What? How weird is this?" You remember? You must remember when it did the bass line, and then it went on to another scene.
That show made Larry David insanely rich.
Oh yeah. And then Curb Your Enthusiasm was just basically like the adult Seinfeld, like, you know, the not-made-for-TV Seinfeld.
Oh, I don't know. I would like that from what I've heard about it. He's just a guy who inadvertently offends people, right?
Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Without even trying. Yeah, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. I would really enjoy that, I think.
Did you see the Saturday Night Live skit they did last week?
With Bernie Sanders? Yeah.
Yeah,
Larry Sanders is dead on for him.
You know, when he did the Burn Your Enthusiasm, and it was explaining why he lost the primary by like 5 votes, because he didn't help one lady get got into a car accident who was on her way to vote for him. And then, like, he was about to shake somebody's hand, they sneezed in the hand, so he didn't shake the hand. And it made it seem like he wouldn't shake the hand because they were black. And so he lost 5 people's votes, and that's why he lost the primary.
Yeah. Anyway, a really good movie that guy from Curb Your Enthusiasm did, a little indie one, was Robot on Frank, which I really liked, about an old age pensioner who's an ex-thief being looked after by a robot in his old age, obviously set in the future. And he teaches the robot to be as bad as he was in his youth. That's excellent, Lindy movie. Anyway, back to the main thread.
All right, now, quick, the last bit of TV news we have is, for the first time in America, Fox TV had a number one show outdoing ABC, NBC, and CBS, and it was America's Most Wanted, which at that time, you know, that was the guys, the host was, I think his name, was it Adam, or was that his kid's name was Adam?
Adam was the son.
Adam was the son. Basically, the host of the show, his son was went missing, and he did this show trying to hunt down criminals, and it later turned up that his son was actually murdered back, you know, 10 years when he started doing the show. 10 years later, they found him.
You know, Ray still wished the show was on the air, so.
Yeah, it was a good show. I mean, it definitely, you know, opened the way for a lot of reality-type TV shows like Cops.
Oh, we have one here in Spain as well. That same format. Police going round, picking up the prostitutes and the drunks and the dealers and the illegal immigrants and the weirdos.
All right. Going back to the music tip. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Soul to Soul had a hit for 15 days in July with Back to Life at number one. The follow-up to that was a hit from a woman called Sonia, and I've never heard of this song, called You'll Never Stop Me From Loving You, and that was number one from July 16th to July 29th. So pretty much for the rest of the month, 2 days, it was your number one song.
You won't talk at all. It won't.
I can't stand it anymore.
Yeah, that's I never heard that song.
I have. I know. I can give you some background if you like. Just from my memory, if you like.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I can give you some background on this lady and her producers and the whole thing around it if you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sonia was a young teenager from Liverpool, redhead, and she got picked up by a very famous set of English UK music producers. They were called Stock, Aitken and Waterman. And this trio, they also produced the likes of Kylie Minogue, if you've heard of her, and yes. Jason Donovan and Rick Astley as well. And they were highly criticised during that era because they almost homogenised all the artists because they always used the same beats, the same synths, the same style of music and beats. And vocals, and it was making different artists very similar through their little factory, and that's all I can say about it.
Yeah, it definitely sounded like a Rick Astley song. And speaking of Rick Astley, he just recently turned 50 years old, just like one of the people on our network here who go nameless.
Holy shit.
Yeah, now getting back into American music from July 2nd to July 8th. The number one song was by a group called Fine Young Cannibals. I believe this was their first number one hit and their first release. It was Good Thing. Let's give that a listen here for a minute.
I don't know if I have that.
Oh, you don't have that?
I can sing it.
Good thing. Where have you gone?
Good thing.
No, I don't have Fine Young Cannibals.
Okay. Well, anyway, Roland Giff was the most talented guy back then. And again, another guy who just disappeared in the mid-90s onwards. And he was a film actor back then in Scandal about the Profumo affair in England, London, about a politician going with a model. And there was another one. He was in Sammy and Rosie Get Laid. I don't know what that's about. I think it was... I can't remember. It was probably some... Oh, let's have a look. Let's look it up.
He also went on to play in the Highlander TV show.
Yeah, but it was just a walk-on part for a few episodes, right?
Yeah, he played... It was about 5 episodes. He was in the Highlander TV show.
But he wasn't the brother of Duncan MacLeod, was he?
No. No,
but it had a MacLeod surname, you told me, I think, once.
It wasn't MacLeod. It was St. Cloud.
Oh, St. Cloud.
Yeah. All right, so the number one song after Fine Young Cannibals was Simply Red doing a cover song of If You Don't Know Me By Now.
Like I understand you. Now, girl, I know the difference between right and wrong. I ain't gonna do nothing to break up our happy home. Oh, I don't get so excited when I come home a little late at night. Cause we only act like children when we argue, fuss, and fight.
And that was Simply Red with their rendition of If You Don't Know Me By Now. Moving on. Now, we have a lot of, unfortunately.
Did they have any other hits besides that?
Not that I'm aware of. I wasn't much into that style of music back then, so I didn't listen to it much.
One thing is very peculiar is how can a British little white red-haired midget from the cold northwest of England actually sing like soul music? It's ironic that he can, and
well, a lot of Brits try to sing soul music.
But he's probably one of the ones who really did it the best, I think. I mean, you might not like the guy, but he's certainly got it. He's got it. But he's ginger and white.
Beats me, but he's got a decent voice. Now, on July 1st, we had an English actor by the name of Mitch Hewer born, as well as an actress named Hannah Murray, not familiar with any of their work. On July 11th, David Henry, who's an American actor, was born. On the 14th, Sean Flynn Amir.
I know who Mitch Hewer is.
Who's that?
He's a sort of Scottish guy who was in Ultravox, and he sang Vienna. You know Vienna.
Yes.
The feeling. Yes, I won't sing the chorus.
Okay. Josie Lopez was born on the 17th. She's an American actress. Jamie Ouellette was born on the 21st. He's a British actor. Now, Rory Culkin, who's the brother of Macaulay Culkin from Home Alone, was actually born on the 21st of January 1989. Noelle Callahan, born on the 25th of 1989 in July. Charlotte Arnold, both of those are Canadian actors and actresses. But the biggest name of anybody born in July of 1989, excuse me, was Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe. He's probably definitely the most famous person off that list, and I've never seen a Harry Potter
that
movie.
That was the year Voldemort died the first time?
Yeah, I would imagine. I don't even know what you're talking about because I've never seen a Harry Potter movie.
You don't know Voldemort?
I have heard the name, but I don't know what he does. Character is. I've heard the name.
He is the evil wizard of evil wizards. And it is said that he can't live if Harry Potter lives. So he tried to kill Harry Potter as a baby, but he failed and he died. And then Harry Potter lived to become the most famous wizard of all time. And of course,
he's basically just like the bad new Star Wars character. Just looks, it's just him,
okay,
but with magic.
No, first of all, don't compare Voldemort to the baddest man in the universe, Darth Vader. Darth Vader wins every.
No, not Darth Vader. The other guy. What's his name?
Kylo Ren.
Not Kylo Ren's master. I forgot his name.
Snoke. You talking about
Supreme Leader Snoke?
No.
Yeah.
Not Supreme Leader Snoke. You're talking about the Emperor.
No, Snoke. Snooky. Darth Snooky. Snoke. The guy with a massive hologram that Kylo Ren approached.
The new one. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah. A lot of people told me. I think I saw parts of the first Harry Potter movie, but it just seemed too childish. So I never went back and watched the rest, even though everybody told me that it gets a lot darker as he gets older.
They do. Like the first one is meant to be a light affair. You know, you're dealing with 10-year-olds and
yeah. So oh gosh, I say there's a bishop, a knight. Hey, use your magic wand there, Hermione. Hey.
And it's
all a bit like that.
It's meant to set the world, set everything up. But by the time you get to the last two.
I want to say something about that.
It's death everywhere.
That, you know, if those were real 10-year-old school kids, they'd be sniffing glue, having sex, and swearing like sailors.
10-year-olds don't have sex, Stanley. This is not the world you make up, okay?
All right, moving along. Unfortunately, we also have people that died. We had Jeff Richards, actor, died, famous for Don't Go Near the Water, was 66. Ernest Morrison for Peggy Does Her Darndest died. Doesn't have an age listed here. Donald Barthelem was an author, born 1931. He died. Rebecca Schaefer was murdered by an obsessed fan, which led to stricter stalking laws in California. So she was actually killed by a stalker, which is sad. The most famous people that died that month was Laurence Olivier. Of course, we know him, you know, as the great British actor, stage and screen. What do you remember him for, Stanley?
I think I did mention it. It was Clash of the Titans.
Yes.
Which is a cheesy swords and sorcery movie.
I love that movie. The original one with Burgess Meredith and Harry Hamlin.
I remember A Clockwork Owl, I think.
Bubo.
Bubo. And I remember Laurence Olivier in a big white gown with, I think, a laurel wreath on his head.
Yeah, playing Zeus.
Wise.
He's playing Zeus.
Right.
We also had Jim Backus die. Jim Backus was famous for Gilligan's Island. He played Thurston Howell III. And he also voiced Mr. Magoo.
Oh, Magoo. You've done it again.
I couldn't stand Mr. Magoo when I was a child.
Oh, everybody. What was wrong with you?
I just didn't like it.
It was basically a short-sighted geriatric being made fun of. He was grumpy.
No, he wasn't grumpy. He was just that because he couldn't see, he would get in situations that he would walk out fine, but everybody else around him.
Yeah, this was the irony of it.
Would take shrapnel because he didn't know where he was going. So,
I want to see the cartoon of Mr. Magoo inadvertently initiates global thermal nuclear meltdown. He just wanders into nuclear station and chaos ensues.
And speaking of voice actors, we probably lost the best voice actor of ever.
I agree.
In Mel Blanc on July 10th of that month. For those of you who don't know who Mel Blanc is, he voiced Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Yosemite Sam, Marvin the Martian, Woody Woodpecker, Pepe Le Pew, Speedy Gonzales, Barney Rubble, Mr. Spacely, and that's just to name a few.
Did he do Speedy Gonzales? Really?
Yes.
He must be so talented.
Yes, and he also did the screams and howls and for Tom and Jerry whenever they got hurt. He was doing those noises. Very, very talented voice actor.
Okay, now, boys, come on, talk it up. Come on, fellas, talk it up now. Let's give it to him. Come on, kid, let's give me your rickety rap. Brick a brack a firecracker, sis, boom, bah. Bugs Bunny, rah, rah, rah. Brick a brack a firecracker, sis, boom, bah. Bugs Bunny, rah, rah, rah. Brick a brack a firecracker, sis, boom, bah. Bugs Bunny, rah, rah, rah. Brick a brack a firecracker, sis, boom, bah.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny, that was definitely one of my favorite skits. I loved Looney Tunes growing up.
He did Twiggy for Buck Rogers.
Yes, one of my favorite voices he did was Daffy Duck, especially in that Robin Hood episode where Daffy was standing on the log trying to figure out what move he missed.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You got that sound clip ready, Surfer?
Yeah.
Is that what move he missed on Street Fighter? Oh, I remember this. That was on the Robin Hood one.
Yep.
I remember.
Let's see now. Something amiss here. I'll run through it. Ho, ha, ha, guard, turn, parry, dodge, spin, ha, thrust. Got it. Now then. Ho, ha, ha, guard, turn, parry, dodge, spin.
The Porky came and just stuck the twig in there while he was spinning.
That was Daffy Duck, by the way, playing Will Scarlet, I remember.
Yeah. And actually, for Rick Dyer in the chat room, that's me playing Dark Souls. I'm just swinging my sword around, dodging, parrying, thrusting, spinning, everything. That's how you got to win Dark Souls, Rick. Now, he also, like I was saying, voiced one of my favorite bad guys.
Yosemite Sam! The roughest, toughest he-man, stuffest hombre has ever crossed the Rio Grande. And I don't mean Mahatma Gandhi. Now all of you skunks, clear out of here!
in here.
He jumped the gun on that one, didn't he?
It just goes to show Looney Tunes was quite a liberal show because it mocked the rednecks.
It mocked everybody. A lot of people nowadays say it was very racist, and I can see where they're coming from, but it was just the times it was made.
People would say sexist with showing early, Little Bunny Girl.
There's a lot of early bubbles. Racist cartoons. Looney Tunes, Disney, they were all doing the negative stereotypes.
But come on, Surfer, don't you think Daisy Duck, if a Disney's got a cute ass?
No, I don't look at Daisy Duck like that.
Are you sick, you guys? What's wrong with you?
I say, boy, what's wrong with you? There's some foghorn leg on for
what's,
you.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing.
A foghorn leg on was definitely one of the funniest characters, the way he talked.
Was he basically, he was a yokel, wasn't he, a farm?
He was a rooster on the farm.
But really, he was a yokel, sort of a local rural type, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't very educated.
Right. He played, Surfer's got a voice audio clip of some Foghorn Leghorn.
You do, don't I? Let me see. Right.
Look, sister, is any of this filtering through that little blue bonnet of yours?
Yes.
Nice girl, but about as sharp as a sack of wet mice.
I dread to think the poor translators had to translate that into Italian, French, and Spanish.
You could probably trace back most of the voices to an actual actor from back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember who Foghorn is really based on, like, but there's an actor that...
Oh, I think I know. It wasn't something out of The Wizard of Oz. Based off him?
The Scarecrow?
The guy played the Scarecrow, but the man who played the Scarecrow.
Yeah, I think that's who it was. I was thinking the same thing.
I think it's based off him.
What's his name? Ray something, right?
I don't know.
All right, but let's check back in with music now. On July 30th, this song was number one.
Oh, I got a live one here.
I remember getting invited to a little kids' party, birthday party, with that on, and they all danced to it, and it was the lowest point in my life.
It's embarrassing to have admit to like that song.
But Prince is the king of funk, right, Surfer?
Yep.
But that was a very rushed album that didn't tie into the movie with Jack Nicholson dancing with a ghetto blaster in a... in a art gallery with mimic artists. It didn't work for me.
Party Man was on the album, and that played in the...
Yeah. Movie. Party Man, Lemon Crush, I remember the tracks. All right, okay tracks for Prince. Not brilliant, though, for Prince.
Well, there was two Batman albums, because they had the Prince album.
You had the
album,
score, and then the Prince album.
The Prince one I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Prince one was pretty much shite.
Yeah, it was a 6 out of 7, out of 10 rather, or 7 out of 10 album for Prince. Not his usual 8, 9, 9.5, 10 out of 10 album. He did in the late 70s up until the mid-90s, late, when it was his heyday.
Oh, yeah. Now, opposite of music, and speaking of movies, now, July 1st, when this movie Shag released, I have no idea what that is. I never heard of it. Made roughly $7 million in theaters.
What made $7 million?
A movie called Shag.
Okay.
July 5th was the release of a movie called Haunted Summer, which I never heard of, and that only made $10 million. It's $10,000 at theaters, it says, so it must have been like a small release. Also released that day was Weekend at Bernie's. Came in at $30.2 million, and that became more of a cult hit than anything. You know, still watching today.
I didn't know it made that much his first weekend.
Sorry?
I didn't know it made that much his first weekend.
Well, no, that's how much it made overall. Was $30
million. Oh, okay.
But that movie makes was sense. Definitely funny. And it just, like I said, it became a cult hit. It more of a following than anything. July 7th saw the return of the team-up of Riggs and Murtaugh. We have the Lethal Weapon 2 movie come out, which topped the charts at $141 million overall. For the time, that was quite a bit of money.
I was too young for that shit.
Yeah. We got a little clip here of set the scene up. It was about South Africans and apartheid.
And drug dealers as well. It was a drug dealer.
Yes, and set the scene up. Joe Pesci walks into the South African embassy and tries to get them to allow Murtaugh, who was played by Danny Glover, to go to South Africa. And now we got a clip of that coming up here in just a second.
Mr. Jones, Brett. Sit down, please. Well, what can I do for you today?
Okay, I have this problem, this very delicate matter. I have a friend of mine who wants to emigrate to South Africa.
Yes, of course. I can certainly help him do that.
Oh, sure, but I want you to talk him out of it.
Talk him out of it?
Yeah.
Whatever for?
Well, you see, this is such a bad time for him to go to South Africa. I mean, with all the trouble and everything, okay?
Oh, look, why don't you ask your friend to come back later in the week? We can sit down.
He's here.
He's here.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's here now.
Where?
Alphonse.
How you doing?
I think there must be some mistake.
Say what?
Sir, listen to your friend here. He knows what he's talking about. I don't think you really want to go to South Africa.
Why not?
Because you're black.
You are. He is.
Of course I'm black. That's why I want to go to South Africa. To join up with my oppressed brothers. To take up the struggle against the tyranny of the racist, fascist, white minority regime.
Fascist, white regime.
One man, one vote.
One man, one vote.
Free South Africa, you dumb son of a bitch.
You dumb son of a bitch.
Look, I've heard just about as much as I want to. I'm going to ask both of you.
And then Riggs goes under the gate and sneaks up to the top floor. But you're blick. I laugh at that every single time. And welcome Lee, Ted Turner, and Maddie Legend to the chat room.
And it turned out that Motar was calling the wrong person racist, so.
Yeah.
And Joe Pesci is the comic relief, the Italian.
That's kind of made him, like, somewhat famous. Like, before he started doing...
He was doing serious stuff, but then...
No. Not that he wasn't doing work before then, but before he got into Goodfellas and stuff like that, it was the Lethal Weapon 2 movie that everybody...
My cousin Vinny as well, in the early 90s, was his comic.
Before that. It was
before that. It was quite serious.
This was the movie that made him, like, everybody knew who he was after that.
Really? Yeah. I thought it was Raging Bull that everyone knew.
No, he was in Raging Bull, but he was just...
This movie, like, it boosted him. It, you know...
Like, he's in Raging Bull, but you still didn't know who he was. It's like, he was doing movies, but Lethal Weapon 2 made him to the guy everybody recognized, and so when he showed up in another movie, you knew it was Joe Pesci, and he just, you know, became more and more famous after that.
Yeah. My Cousin Vinny, Goodfellas, all that good stuff. Now, continuing on with the movies, we had a release of a James Bond movie, License to Kill, which was the Timothy Dalton era, which to me was the worst Bond ever. It was garbage. That only made $33 million at the movie theaters. I remember going to see that in the theaters and coming out so disappointed. Also released that same day is When Harry Met Sally. Could this movie always ask that question, can a man and a woman be friends without ever crossing the line of having sex or thinking about having sex with the opposite? Can they be platonic and stay friends?
Hell no.
Two straight people.
No, they can only be friends with benefits is the answer to that.
And, you know, Billy Crystal thought he was the man in the movie, you know, bounced around from women to women, always satisfying them, until Meg Ryan proves him wrong while eating at Cat's Deli. And she goes into a little bit of a female... she basically fakes an orgasm at the table. Do you have that scene queued up, Surfer?
I think that's what Ivana Trump did.
Wait. Wrong. Dang, I know I clicked on the right one.
Yeah, she snapped him back to reality at that point with the.
Okay.
Picking up some background noise.
I know. Okay, did I lose the audio all of a sudden for that?
Did you?
Oh, here we go. That's okay. I see.
So what do you do with these women? You just get up out of bed and leave?
Sure.
Well, explain to me how you do it. What do you say?
Just have an early meeting, early haircut, early squash game.
You don't play squash.
They don't know that. They just met me.
That's disgusting.
I know. I feel terrible.
You know, I'm so glad I never got involved with you. I just would have ended up being some woman you had to get up out of bed and leave at 3 o'clock in the morning and go clean your andirons. And you don't even have a fireplace. Not that I would know this.
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
Hey, I don't feel great about this, but I don't hear anyone complaining.
Of course not. You're out the door too fast.
I think they have an okay time.
How do you know?
I mean, how do I know? I know.
Because they...
Yes, because they...
How do you know that they're really...
What are you saying? That they fake orgasm?
It's possible.
Get out of here.
Why? Most women at one time or another have faked it.
Well, they haven't faked it with me.
How do you know?
Because I...
Oh. Right. That's right. I forgot. You're a man.
What is that supposed to mean?
Nothing. It's just that all men are sure it never happened to them, and most women at one time or another have done it, so you do the math.
You don't think that I can tell a difference?
No.
Get out of here.
Ooh. Oh. Ooh.
Are you okay?
Oh. Oh, God. Ooh. Oh, God. Oh. 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 Oh, God. Oh, yeah, right there. Oh. 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 Oh, God. Oh. Yes. 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 Yes! Yes! Ah! Oh.
I'll have what she's having.
Well, you know something? That was actually, I've heard a funny story about that, because it's not actually Meg Ryan's real orgasm sounds. It was actually secretly lifted from the Clintons' household.
Nice.
That's impossible, because that didn't go on at the Clinton house. That might have went on in the Oval Office, but not in the White House.
I don't know. I think that Hillary chick is quite a hot little number.
Okay. He's reeling in there, Stanley. Hillary just needs to go like down a garbage dumpster chute. But moving on with the movies, on July 21st, we had a movie called Eat a Bowl of Tea released. It only made $231,000 at the movie theaters. One of Maddie Legend's favorite movies, UHF, was also released, making $6.1 million during its release. Continuing on with the Friday the 13th series, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, was released on the 28th of July, making $5 million. And Turner and Hooch wrapped up the end of the month, being released and made $70 million in its box office run. Now, the number one song in America for the weeks of July 16th to 29th, which I'm going to call the number one song of July because it's the only one that ran for 2 weeks, was pretty much a one-hit wonder and an anti-war song by Martika. The song was recently featured on the Goldbergs. It's a song by the name of Toy Soldiers. Let's give that a little bit of a listen. Yeah, I love that song when it came out.
I thought it was an anti-war song, but I was wrong. It was actually a song she wrote about one of her friend's drug addictions. So they were helpless as mindless toy soldiers who fell down.
All right. At this time, the show is coming to a close. Make sure you stay tuned at 5 p.m. You have the What Are You Reading comic book show with Surfer and Jordan Cobb. Tomorrow night, you have Talk Brunch at 11:30 with Rick Dara and a host of rascals joining him. I don't even know who will be joining him, but it'll be a host of them.
Mick Wrestling and Padawan Jen and other surprises.
And on Tuesday night, the flagship show, The Rant, will be on at 8 p.m., followed by Freaks and Effing Geeks with Lee Champine and Rage. Thursday night, you have the, with Mofo and Pookie?
Rant and Wrestling.
Rant and Wrestling. I'm sorry, fellas, I forgot the name of the show. Friday night, my boy Phil and Dave are back with another great throwback on the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. And Saturday night at 11 p.m., you have Will Morgan with the Wrestling Call-In Show. I would like to thank everybody for showing up in the chat room. Maddie Legend, Joshy, Ted Turner, Rick Dara, Blonde Shell. Who else did I miss in there? Jordan Cobb was in there. Lee Champion was in there. We had a lot of people turn out tonight. Thank you, fellas, for coming out and supporting this show. Thank you, Surfer, for producing the show. I do apologize about the audio issues we had. My co-host, Stanley Kubrick. We're going to fade out here with the number one song at the end of July, on July 30th in the UK, was by Jive Bunny and the Mixmasters.
No! I hate Jive Bunny.
Well, enjoy it while it lasts, because that's what's closing the show, fellas.
What would you rather be, a Jive Bunny or a Jive Turkey?
Exactly.
It was a turkey.
Come on, everybody! Come on, everybody!
Seven o'clock.